She blinked, hesitated a moment as though what I'd said made no sense to her. I used to wonder how Rajchai reproduced, if they were all the same gender.
They're not, and they reproduce like anyone else.
Stregan raised one skeptical eyebrow.
They go to the medic, I continued, and have their contraceptive implants deactivated. Or they use a tank, or they have surgery so they can carry a pregnancy. Or they hire someone to carry it.
None of it was very different from what any other kind of people did, but Stregan seemed slightly scandalized.
You're certainly Rajchai, and certainly very familiar with Captain Saevardhan, but you're not like him. I wondered from the start if you were an ancillary, but I don't see much in the way of implants. Who are you?
She would have to look a good deal closer than she already had to see evidence of what I was. To a casual observer, I looked as though I had one or two communications and optical implants. The sort of thing millions of people got as a matter of course, Rajchai or not. And during the last 20 years, I'd found ways of concealing the specifics of what I had. I picked up my own dishes, rose. I'm Breck from the Gerentate.
Stregan snorted, disbelieving.
The Gerentate was far enough from where I'd been for the last 19 years to conceal any small mistakes I might make.
Just a tourist, Stregan observed, in a tone that made it clear she didn't believe me at all.
Yes, I agreed.
So, what's the interest in?
She gestured again at Saevardhan, still sleeping, breathing slow and even.
Just a stray animal that needed rescuing?
I didn't answer. I didn't know the answer, truthfully.
I've met people who collect strays. I don't think you're one of them. There's something cold about you, something edged. You're far more self-possessed than any tourist I've ever seen.
And of course I knew she had the gun, which no one but herself and Anandar Mianai should have known existed. But she couldn't say that without admitting she had it.
There's no way in 17 hells you're a Gerentate tourist. What are you?
If I told you, it would spoil your fun, I said. Stregan opened her mouth to say something, possibly something angry to judge from her expression, when an alarm sounded.
Visitors, she said instead.
By the time we got our coats on and got out the two doors, a crawler had made a ragged path up to the house, dragging a white trench across the moss-tinged snow, its half-spinning halt missing my flyer by centimeters. The door popped open and a Nilter slid out, shorter than many I'd met, bundled in a scarlet coat embroidered in bright blue and a screaming shade of yellow, but overlaid with dark stains. Snow moss and blood. The person halted a moment and then saw us standing at the entrance to the house.
Doctor, she called. Help!
Before she was done speaking, Stregan was striding across the snow. I followed. On closer inspection, I saw the driver was only a child, barely 14. In the passenger seat lay sprawled an adult, unconscious, clothes torn nearly to shreds, in places all the way through every layer. Blood soaked the cloth and the seat. Her right leg was missing below the knee and her left foot. Among the three of us, we got the injured person into the house, into the infirmary.
What happened? Stregan asked as she removed bloody fragments of coat.
Ice devil, said the girl. We didn't see it.
Tears welled in her eyes but didn't fall. She swallowed hard. Stregan appraised the makeshift tourniquets the girl had obviously applied.
You did everything you could, she told the girl.
She nodded toward the door to the main room.
I'll take it from here.
We left the infirmary, the girl apparently not even aware of my presence or Savardin's, where she still lay on her pallet. She stood for a few seconds in the middle of the room, uncertain, seeming paralyzed, and then she sank down on a bench. I brought her a cup of fermented milk, and she started, as though I had suddenly appeared from nowhere. "Are you injured?" I asked her. No misgendering this time. I had already heard Striegen use the feminine pronoun. She stopped, looking at the cup of milk as though it might bite her.
"No, not... a little."
She seemed on the verge of collapse. She might well be. By Rodchai standards, she was still a child, but she had seen this adult injured. Was she a parent, a cousin, a neighbor? And had the presence of mind to render some small bits of first aid, get her into a crawler, and come here? Small wonder if she was about to fall to pieces now. "What happened to the ice devil?" I asked.
"I don't know."
She looked up at me from the milk, still not taking it.
"I kicked it. I stabbed it with my knife. It went away. I don't know."
It took a few minutes for me to get the information out of her that she'd left messages for the others at her family's camp, but that no one had been near enough to help, or was near enough to be here terribly soon. While we were talking, she seemed to collect herself, at least slightly, at least enough to take the milk I offered and drink it. Within a few minutes she was sweating, and she removed both her coats and laid them on the bench beside her, and then sat, quiet and awkward. I knew of nothing that might relieve her distress. "Do you know any songs?" I asked her. She blinked, startled.
"I'm not a singer," she said.
It might have been a language issue. I hadn't paid much attention to customs in this part of this world, but I was fairly sure there was no division between songs anyone might sing and songs that were, usually for religious reasons, only sung by specialists. Not in the cities near the equator. Maybe it was different this far south. "Excuse me," I said, "I must have used the wrong word. What do you call it when you're working or playing or trying to get a baby to sleep, or just..."
"Oh!"
Comprehension animated her for just a moment.
"You mean songs!"
I smiled encouragingly, but she lapsed into silence again. "Try not to worry too much," I said. "The doctor is very good at what she does. And sometimes you just have to leave things to the gods." She curled her lower lip inward and bit it.
"I don't believe in any god," she said with a slight vehemence.
"Still, things will happen as they happen." She gestured agreement, perfunctory. "Do you play counters?" I asked. Maybe she could show me the game Striegen's board was meant for, though I doubted it was from Nilt.
"No."
And with that, I had exhausted what small means I might have had to amuse or distract her. After 10 minutes of silence, she said,
"I have a tick-tick set."
"What's tick-tick?" Her eyes widened, round in her round, pale face.
"How can you not know what tick-tick is? You must be from very far away."
I acknowledged that I was, and she answered,
"It's a game. It's mostly a game for children."
Her tone implied she wasn't a child, but I'd best not ask why she was carrying a child's game set.
"You've really never played tick-tick?"
"Never. Where I come from, we mostly play counters and cards and dice, but even those are different in different places." She pondered that a moment.
"I can teach you," she said finally. "It's easy."
2 hours later, as I was tossing my handful of tiny bove bone dice, the visitor alarm sounded. The girl looked up, startled. "Someone's here," I said. The door to the infirmary stayed shut, Striegen paying no attention.
"Mama?"
the girl suggested, hope and relief lending the tiniest tremble to her voice. I hope so. I hope it's not another patient. Immediately I realized I shouldn't have suggested it. I'll go see. It was Mama, unquestionably. She jumped out of the flyer she had arrived in and made for the house with a speed I wouldn't have thought possible over the snow. She strode past me without acknowledging my existence in any way. Tall for a Nilter and broad, as they all were, bundled in coats, the signs of her relationship to the girl inside clear in the lines of her face. I followed her in. On seeing the girl now standing by the abandoned tick-tick board, she said,
Well then, what?
A Rodchai parent would have put her arms around her daughter, kissed her, told her how relieved she was her daughter was well, maybe even would have wept. Some Rodchai would have thought this parent cold and affectionless, but I was sure that would have been a mistake. They sat down together on a bench, sides touching, as the girl gave her report, what she knew of the patient's condition, and what had happened out in the snow with the herd and the ice devil. When she had finished, her mother patted her twice on the knee, briskly, and it was as though she were suddenly a different girl. Taller, stronger, now she had, it seemed, not only her mother's strong, comforting presence, but her approval. I brought them two cups of fermented milk, and Mama's attention snapped to me, but not, I thought, because I was of any interest in particular.
You're not the doctor, she said, bare statement.
I could see her attention was still on her daughter. Her interest in me stretched only as far as I might be a threat or a help. I'm a guest here, I told her, but the doctor is busy, and I thought you might like something to drink. Her eyes went to Savardin, still sleeping, as she had for the last several hours, that black, trembling corrective spread across her forehead, the remains of bruising around her mouth and nose.
She's from very far away, said the girl. She didn't know how to play tick-tick.
Her mother's gaze flicked over the set on the floor. The dice, the board, and flat painted stone pieces halted in mid-course. She said nothing, but her expression changed, just slightly. She gave a small, almost imperceptible nod, and took the milk I offered. 20 minutes later, Savardin woke, brushed the black corrective off her head, and wiped fretfully at her upper lip, pausing at the flakes of dried blood that rubbed away. She looked at the two Nilters, sitting silent, side by side, on a nearby bench, studiously ignoring both her and me. Neither of them seemed to find it odd that I didn't go to Savardin's side or say anything to her. I didn't know if she remembered why I had hit her or even that I had. Sometimes a blow to the head affects memories of the moments leading up to it, but she must have either remembered or suspected something, because she didn't look at me at all. After fidgeting a few minutes, she rose and went to the kitchen and opened a cabinet. She stared for 30 seconds and then got a bowl and hard bread to put in it, and water to pour over it, and then stood staring, waiting for it to soften, saying nothing, looking at no one. Chapter 8. At first, the people I had sent away from the Four Temple Water stood whispering in small groups on the street, and then dispersed when I approached, walking my regular rounds. But soon after, everyone disappeared into their houses, clustered together within. For the next few hours, the upper city was quiet. Eerily so, and it didn't help that Lieutenant On continually asked me what was happening there. Lieutenant On was sure increasing my presence in the upper city would only make the situation worse, so instead she ordered me to stay close to the plaza. If anything happened, I would be there, between the upper and lower city. It was largely because of this that when things went to pieces, I was still able to function more or less effectively.